Secretariat of the Defense, and as a way of welcoming you, I'll introduce myself. My name is Enmuti Mele, Chairperson of the Defense and Military Veterans, and I'll go on and ask all the members to introduce themselves, and after we'll get the department to introduce themselves. Thank you, Mdula Sulo. I'm Nato Mamlambo, from the ANC, a member of the Portfolio Committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I'm Nompalelo Mabeja, from the ANC, member of the Portfolio Committee of Defense. Thank you.
ANC member, Portfolio Committee of Defense.
Hi, good morning, everybody. My name is David Mania. I'm a member of the Portfolio Committee on Defence and Military Veterans.
Thank you, Chair. James Masango, member of this Portfolio Committee.
Thank you very much. Dande Mlangeni, you are welcome. I've introduced you already. The whip of the committee, Ali Mazia, you're welcome. Can we get your staff to introduce themselves, Secretary of the Defense?
The Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members of the Portfolio Committee, good morning. My name is Mbumi Mbofu. I'm the Secretary for Defense, and we can start with Dr. Kamede to introduce herself and go around.
Good morning, Chair and members. My name is Thobekile Kamede, the Chief of Policy, Strategy and Planning.
Good morning, Chair and Honorable Members. My name is Mziwonga Dlabantu. I'm the Chief Financial Officer of the Department of Defense.
Good morning, Chairperson. My name is Bonnie Engelbrecht, Chief Director, Budget Management in the Department of Defense.
Good morning, Chairperson, Honorable Members. I'm Dr. Mary Ledwaba. I'm the Chief Director for Human Resource Strategy and Policy.
Good morning, Chairperson and Honorable Members. I'm Nandi Pansaloba, responsible for Defense Strategy and Planning. Thank you.
Good morning, Chairperson and Honourable Members. I'm Antoine Fischer, the Chief Defence Material in the Secretariat for the Department of Defence. Thank you.
Morning, Honourable Members. Sandy Mbasha in the Minister's Office.
Good morning, Chair. My name is Mfano Konsachwayo. I'm from the Compliance Unit.
Good morning, Chair, Honourable Members. I'm Wale van Geerden. I'm the Head of Compliance Unit in the Department of Defence.
Good morning, Chairperson and Honourable Members. My name is Ntumeni Nangobera. I'm the Acting Government Information Technology Officer.
Good morning, Chair. I'm Major Ramona, Acting Chief Defence Legal Services.
Good morning, Chair, Honourable Members. I'm Rear Admiral Alan Green, the Director of Military Strategy.
Good morning, Chair, Honourable Members. I am Major General Bus Sindane, Acting Chief Corporate Staff.
Good morning, Chair and Members, Honorable Members. My name is Dumisani Dada. I am Chief Director of Strategic Management in Defense Department. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Honorable
My hand was not up, Chairperson. This man who raised his hand. But I've seen the SG, the Secretary for Defense, that I didn't copy his breath.
Thank you.
Thank you,
and I've introduced you already. Look, do we have any apologies? The apologies that I have here is from Gabadeli, Honorable Gabadeli, Honorable Grunewald, Honorable Mpakele. Do we have any other apology? In the absence of any, we'll move straight to the business of the day, which will be the presentation led by the Secretary for the Defense. Ma'am Pofu.
Honorable Chairperson and honorable members of the Portfolio Committee, we are here before you this morning to present to you the strategic plan. And as we do so, we will provide an outline of the presentation we'll present to you. Can I confirm, Chair, that the documents have been made available to members, but importantly, the presentations, copies of which are on their way, and they'll be circulated as soon as they're coming. We apologize for that. They're actually just printing now and will be circulated in about 5 to 10 minutes. We'll be providing and reminding us all of what the defense mandate is, strategic overview, regulatory requirements, paradigm shift, and the outcomes-based planning, which is really the new method of planning that has been prescribed by National Treasury in this particular financial year moving forward to align itself with the outcomes-based method that is used for planning in government at cluster level and all levels of government. We'll be talking through the strategic planning framework, the outlook of the plan, policy proposals. We'll also be talking to you in detail about the budget and for financial allocation and the budget. Chair, this year, you would recall that normally we are able to deal with in the previous years when the processes were not aligned. We would have been talking to you about the strategic plan. We would be coming back at another time to talk to you about the budget. We do both today, particularly because the discussion of the strategic plan is aligned and meant to facilitate your participation in the budget speech, which is scheduled, as I understand it, from the 13th of April. And it is both these items that we'll be deliberating upon, which look specifically at the defense budget and ask us to raise some pertinent questions which we would like the members of the committee to particularly focus. A reminder of what the Defense Department mandate is in terms of Section 202 of the Constitution and Section 227 of the Interim Constitution of South Africa. We've identified for ourselves a vision which is excellence in governance to ensure efficiency and effective defense delivery. Our mission is a defense secretary that directs and specifies managerial administrative advisory services to achieve the ends of the defense strategy and enhance the effects of the MOD for civil control. My apologies, Chair. I think there's... Thank you. The copies of the presentation are here. We've also identified values, individual values, including discipline, transparency, excellence, leadership, honesty, integrity, accountability, fairness, and teamwork. Organizational values, which include improving service standards, excellence, ethics, openness, transparency, consultation, which is rooted in effective and efficient partnership and collaboration, people, teamwork, accountability, and discipline. In this presentation, we'll be providing you with an overarching statement, strategic plan, and annual performance plan. Regulatory requirements, as I say, that's partly what has changed in the environment around Treasury Regulation 511, which is the annual preparation of strategic plans. But importantly, the Money Bills Amendment Procedure and Related Matters Act, and the parliamentary requirement of tabling of the strategic plan, and the development of planning instruments and the content thereof as required by Regulation 5.2. The planning instruments also present a culmination of extensive process, which basically was initiated around November 2008. and we go through a very detailed and extensive process of planning, and we sharpen our prioritization of issues in relation to this process. DoD corporate strategic plan and annual performance plan were developed taking into cognizance the annual approval channel, and it was decided basically to deal with the corporate plan. The rationale is basically the Defense Secretariat and the SANDF, and the reports would be able to give us guidance on those. The outcomes-based planning, and I've indicated here, the outcomes-based planning is intended to deal specifically with the issue of aligning departmental strategic plans with the outcomes-based planning of government. It is intended to deal with the planning instruments of the outcome-based planning and the prioritization of MTSF, but importantly, the prioritization as it has been set out, which deals with outcomes, outputs, activities, and inputs. On the strategic planning framework, this is a methodological approach that is utilized on the strategic impacts on outcomes, on outputs, activities, and defense inputs. Just on the methodology, we emphasize that we've dealt with the content of strategic planning instruments, and importantly, we've integrated that with the outcomes and illustrated how basically the interface between the two is influenced by the change agenda, and effectively our aim is to achieve a sustained agenda, bearing in mind, importantly, the cross-cutting outcome. Now, importantly on this, we want to talk you through the very important issues of the DoD priorities, the MOD priorities, the delivery agreements, which are influenced by MTSF priorities and the outcomes. And that is all derived primarily from the electoral mandate. The DoD overarching strategic statement basically deals with and has been developed to anchor the Defense Secretariat and SANDF plans, and is associated with selected performance indicators and provides also for the current estimate of national expenditure. The inputs, as the process requires, is consulted with National Treasury, Auditor General, Presidency, the Inspector General, and Defense Intelligence accordingly. The overarching statement is contained in the documents that have been circulated, is also the culmination of planning and budgeting process since October 2009, with the plans being submitted in April 2010. It's also been amended to include priorities in November 2010 and was finalized in January of 2011, importantly with the new Treasury deadlines that have been set. The outlook of the overarching statements includes the defense function and context, the medium-term strategic focus, the ministerial priorities, the outcomes, outputs, financial considerations, performance indicators, and alignment with MTSF priorities, and very importantly, the service delivery plan. If we just start with the issue of the strategic priorities, we also indicate here what planning process we've gone through, which is a very extensive planning process that we've dealt with over the years. The planning process commenced 2 years ago prior to the year of execution, which is current year. The cycle begins also with the initiation of the environmental analysis. The work session deals with the issues of planning and budgeting, and the minister provides guidelines to inform the strategic planning process in the next financial year. There are then work sessions that are held, which work sessions provide departmental guidelines to help the planning process. And then there are presentations that are made, including plans that are submitted. But also we take inputs from Cabinet Lakotla, the State of the Nation Address, the budget vote, the budget of the country, medium-term budget policy statement. And then these are actually presented to the MOD in January of the following year, and they are then submitted as we did on the 9th of March. What we may indicate here is that the workshops that have been held between ourselves and the Presidency have been extensive, and they have included our ability to refine the documents and particularly to improve the performance information. We've also commissioned a diagnostic study to identify problem areas and inconsistencies in current planning and reporting methodologies and have proposed improvements and suggested ways forward to implement these improvements. The recommendations we've made take into account the strategic planning framework, and we've provided norms and standards on which planning and monitoring and evaluation will be based on focusing on the outcomes that we set. We've also looked at the issues of the implications that have been derived, improved our focus on the outcomes and outputs, and ensured that we're able to align the monitoring and evaluation systems with outcomes-based models. Our outlook for strategic priorities in this particular strategic plan look at the following areas. The execution of border safeguarding function, which is executed largely through Operation Corona, but extensively will be supported by further interventions that we'll make in the DoD environment. This, Chairperson, I can confirm, is emerging as a very important priority. We, in our scan of the environment, find that the issues related to illegal migration are becoming very significant in our country. The expansion of the functions of border safeguarding becomes more important, but importantly, the resource requirements to support this function become quite important. We will illustrate later on as we discuss in detail. We've even had to fast-track and bring forward some of the target dates we initially set for ourselves on the border safeguarding function. The second priority, strategic priority, looks at the issue of the implementation of the new Defense Force Service Dispensation, which has given rise, Chairperson, with the amendment of the Defense Act, which amendment quite clearly indicates the requirement for an establishment of an entire service dispensation that is different from the public service, as the Defense Amendment Act stipulates. And this starts with the establishment of the National Defense Force Service Commission. Chairperson, I can indicate at this point that the nominations committee, which is to appoint and oversee the process of appointment of the National Defense Force Service Commission, has been appointed, is currently doing the work, and will very soon be able to provide the minister with a list of proposed defense service commissioners to establish formally the National Defense Force Service Commission. I elaborate on this point, Chairperson, because I'm aware that members of this committee have just most recently been involved with this piece of legislation, and progress with this regard is something that we are grateful to them for facilitating the passage of this legislation through the House. The enhancement of the FANDF land of defense capabilities is our next priority. We would also indicate that we have a new emerging priority that is as a result of the activities in our maritime arena, particularly related to the east coast of the African continent, the threat of piracy and the Somali pirate issue. That is presenting itself as an emerging priority which we have to deal with urgently, and in that context we would be able to indicate at a later stage what progress we're making. The President of the Republic has repeatedly emphasized job creation as the most important priority. We in defense take this priority very seriously and particularly have devised programs that are aimed at ensuring that we're able to respond to this very specific requirement. Importantly, we've identified what we call a quick wins, which will enable us to respond to the issue of creating job opportunities in the defense sector. We'll indicate in other areas where we are able to influence the creation of jobs, but specifically in this area, which is our specific responsibility, is the filling of 1,401 vacant funded positions. And we make the distinction specifically between all vacant positions and funded vacant positions, specifically because the requirement is about funded positions, and unfunded positions we are not able to fill at this particular point. until budget allocation suggests otherwise. Importantly, we also prioritize for job creation the recruitment of 5,700 young South Africans per year to the military skills development system, which we consider to be a very important program. We also ensure the call-up of 16,400 defense reserve members per year to undertake specific tasks over the specific period of time. We'll also ensure the enhancement of the DoD work capability to create opportunities for people with technical skills within the DoD environment. We'll also identify, importantly, the enhancements of the FANDF peacekeeping capability, and this particularly in the peace support operations on the African continent. Another priority of ours is the National Youth Service Program, which we emphasize is largely going to contribute also to job creation, but will enable us to contribute meaningfully towards the youth and their development in our country. Revitalization of reserves, we've discussed this matter extensively. I think we're actually, Chairperson, at the point at which a submission is going to be made to the committee. I think the Minister has already requested that they are able to put forward to the committee the proposals on how the revitalization of the reserves will happen. And we would see that being implemented as soon as the committee has considered that proposal on revitalization of reserves. The restructuring and support of the defense industry, quite importantly, the development of a defense industry strategy together with all the support mechanisms, including very clear priorities around transformational objectives of the defense industry and the issues of job creation, assessment and growth, and monitoring of job creation that happens in the defense industry. The Department of Defense work capability is another priority where we intend to deal specifically with the issues of our infrastructure and facilities through the establishment of work capability within defense, which will enable us to provide maintenance of our facility to deal with some of the challenges we face in this environment. In fact, Chairperson, on this particular issue, we are looking at a proposal which would look at defense migrating to a mechanism that allows defense alone or defense to exit and find different arrangements with public works with respect to the management of facilities and properties. And this particular component of works capability is aimed at providing defense with internal capacity to deal with the maintenance in that. The outcomes, at a high level, we confirm the outcomes that are derived from the Constitution as well, that the Republic of South Africa is defended and protected as required by the Constitution, and secondly, that we're able to ensure enhanced civil control over defense as required by Section 204 with the Defense Act Section 42 and Section 6. The outputs. Importantly, we consider the issue of conducting ordered defense commitments in accordance with government policy and strategy as an important output of the work that we'll do, providing mission-ready defense capabilities, providing sound defense direction, ensuring defense compliance with regulatory framework. We list there all of the DoD activities, and we start giving you selected some of the examples of very good examples of performance indicators that we set for ourselves in the strategic plan. If we just start with the first one, the number of personnel that we think would be deployed in external operations. And this is an average figure, which basically is calculated on the basis of some of the deployments being terminated in this year, maybe potentially new deployments emerging in the new year. And we indicate our target there and projections of 1,985 for the financial year 11-12, 12-13, and 13-14. Number of internal operations in support of other government departments, our estimate projections indicate that we would probably have four. The number of joint interdepartmental and military exercises that are conducted per year, eight in each one of those financial years. An important issue of the percentage of compliance to UN requirements, rules and regulations for peace missions, or quite ambitiously targeting 100% in terms of compliance level, but that largely also depends on the budget allocation, which will enable us to meet those targets. We have decided, in order to deal with this particular challenge, to prioritize the compliance to the United Nations requirements in our budget allocation. Total number of defense diplomatic missions, 37. Throughout, we have no intention of increasing those necessarily over the period, but we have found examples, for instance, of where we may have wanted to withdraw the services of defense diplomatic missions in particular countries because they've either become redundant or irrelevant over the years, and they are replacement in other countries where we've possibly been not deployed. So if there are movements, there will be movements that are terminating others and replacing them with others rather than an increase. Importantly, we're also participants. In addition to our own functions of border safeguarding, which actually refers to the border line, we are participants in the justice crime prevention and security cluster in the establishment of a border management agency, and we will be developing to support our own operation and our participation in the border management agency. We'll be finalizing the DOD border management strategy, which takes on board both of these angles to border management, and we hope to conclude that in this financial year. We also look at the forced employment hours flown each year and set a target of 10,000 in the first year, 8.8 in the second, 9.4 in the next. Number of sea hours on patrol in South African maritime zones, and then number of military skills development members in the system, which we indicate as 11,000. The military skills development system is able to take two intakes in a year, and you will recall that initially in my presentation I indicated the 5,700. That basically means 5,700 the intake, and that would result in the two intakes that are taken in a year. The total number of active reserves, which I indicated we have every intention of increasing from 11,000 to 16,000 to 17,500 in financial year 13-14. Chairperson, what we've done on that particular table is also direct you to very specifically the MTSF outcomes, which MTSF outcomes basically are linked to the targets that we've indicated here, and those include outcome 11, which is the international relations outcome, outcome 12, which is about government and performance, and the reserve, which contributes towards skills development and training, and the skills development also that is indicated. Outside of our own borders, our targets or projections are that we would be 100% compliant with the SADC Early Warning Center and our contribution to SADC and SADC organ outcomes, and we indicate there very clearly that we'll be able to meet the target of 100% of forced employment in the Early Warning Center. We find that this is actually quite a very useful instrument for the purposes of monitoring what goes on in the SADC region, and we've been providing great assistance not only to ourselves but to other countries in SADC and the greater African continent as a result of the Early Warning Center. That has since been operational, I think, in the last 18 to 24 months. Our percentage compliance on SADC standby force indicates 100% compliance as well. We are very active participants in the standby force, and will continue to do so, the strategic intervention, and it becomes quite important also with respect to some of the issues we've related to around the threat of piracy on the East Coast and our coordination of activities in the SADC standby force, and our centrality to the SADC standby force is of great importance. Number of large-scale external operations per year, our estimate is 3. Number of person days used for internal operations, we give you estimates of 375,000 up in the first year to up to 135,000 odd in year financial year 13-14. We also then indicate job creation targets in order to be able to respond to the President's call for prioritization of jobs. We indicate quite clearly there with the various areas that are going to contribute to job creation, including the MSDS program, for which we give you a number per financial year, the number of active reserves, which gives you the total numbers per financial year, the throughput in terms of the National Youth Service. This is a new program that is actually going to start in the financial year 11-12 and will proceed and increase as we proceed in the later years, with the number of 6,000 estimated from financial year 2013-2014. Percentage of vacant funded posts filled, 100%. Decline in turnover rates, we always attribute a reasonable rate of attrition and turnover, but we think we would be able to curb that rate at about 6%, reducing to 5%. Over the MTF period. Establishment of defense work capability, while the stage where we've actually approved the structure and will be monitoring and implementation and dealing with the issue of monitoring impact. The reason we do not stipulate a specific target for job creation in the work capability is because the people that will be engaged in the work capability are currently in the defense environment. They basically will be shifted to this particular component. So specifically, there are no new jobs specifically created out of that. We've already started our engagement with the defense industry, which would deal with the last item there, and in that we identify several areas for job creation assessment in the defense industry, and we'll be able, we have not concluded this exercise yet, but we'll be able, Chairperson, to indicate what targets we have set between ourselves and the defense industry around job creation that contributes. The only thing we caution against ourselves as well is that we don't end up with double counting if the defense industry possibly is already included in the manufacturing sector. We'll be very careful not to overlap what is already accounted for in other sectors of job creation assessment. In the medium-term strategic focus, we reflect on the situation analysis and the performance environment, and indicate how we would be expected to contribute to the medium-term strategic framework in the areas of HR, research capability, intellectual property and patents, infrastructure and facilities, information management, our contribution to the clusters of government in accordance with the 12 priorities, our contribution to the government's new growth path, stakeholder engagement, corporate governance, and an emerging new threat of cyber security, which basically requires specific attention and our participation in the development of a cyber security strategy. That chairperson is our organizational structure, which basically indicates the ministry, the various functions, but also the shared staff, human resources, and the foreign relations and legal components. The legislation which will go through Parliament, we submitted this to the Leader of Government Business and to Parliament as a priority legislation which will be coming through this very committee in this financial year. And that includes the Military Discipline Bill, which basically is derived from the constitutional requirement for the state to respect the dignity of all persons and deal with some of the offences and penalties that are not in line with this injunction. The Geneva Conventions Bill, which we've basically would be taking through, which basically will allow for the conventions and their protocols to be ratified into domestic law in terms of Section 2.3.1 of the Constitution. Defence and Related Acts, the Repeal and Amendment Bill, will be repealing some of the, and amending some of the Defense and Related Acts. Very close to submission to Parliament at this stage, it's gone through the Cabinet cycle, has been approved and would be coming through, is the Military Ombuds Bill, which establishes the Military Ombuds Office, which deals with matters of complaints of members of the SANDF and deals very specifically with some of the elements that are not going to be dealt with by the National Defense Force Service Commission. So it's the Ombuds Office and the National Defense Force Service Commission that in combination, by and large, constitute the institutional arrangement to deal specifically with the human resource matters, complaints, and the conditions of the SANDF. There are a whole set of other regulations that we would like to see passage of through this period. The first is to enable the operationalization of the Defense Service Commission and to establish the regulatory framework within which it operates. And coming through would be the regulations on the Defense Force Service Commission. We'll relate later to also the policy work that needs to be done around this. The appointment of the Defense Military Command Structure is another. You would recall one of the amendments in the Defense Amendment Act was the issue of military command, and would be dealing with the regulatory, if required, component to that. Finalization of regulations developed in terms of the NCACC. Chairperson, I can also confirm extensive work has been done in this. As the financial year 11-12 opens, this matter will be brought for discussion as the regulations are aimed to be finalized in April or May of this year, going through to Cabinet and to Parliament for discussion. We have referred to the issues of the outcomes, and it's important for us to at least ensure that we are able to remind all of us what those particular outcomes relate to. And this is out of the 12 outcomes of government in the medium-term strategic framework. The ones that apply to defense very clearly are outcome 2, which relates to a long and healthy life for all South Africans, and outcome 2 is specifically relating to the work of SAMS in our environment, the military health services. Outcome 3 is the justice, crime prevention, and security sector, and its aim is to ensure that all people in South Africa are and feel safe. While a major contributor to that outcome, the area where we contribute includes the very important area of border safeguarding, which is located within this cluster, but importantly also the area where we support the South African Police Service and crime prevention operations by providing support to them. Outcome 5, we talk to the issue of a skilled and capable workforce, to support an inclusive growth path, and that's basically our contribution via the MSDS program, the National Youth Service program, and others that are aimed at creating skills but intervening at the level of the youth by providing opportunities for employment and growth. Outcome 11 is our primary responsibility, is the outcome that guides the work of the international cooperation, trade, and security cluster. And the Minister of Defense and Military Veterans is the current chair of that cluster, and its particular aim is ensuring that we create a better South Africa and we contribute to a better and safer Africa in a better world. Outcome 12 is largely led by the Department of Public Service and Administration, and that's the outcome that deals specifically with the issue of effective, efficient, and development of the public service and empowered, fair, inclusive citizenship. We have reiterated our outcomes, and what we think is important for us to highlight is what we consider are going to be our primary inputs, and the inputs include the need to provide a professional and supported DoD human resources to enable us to execute effectively and achieve all of the targets we set for ourselves. The second is the provision of appropriate and sustained defense material. The third is the integrated and reliable defense information and intelligence. The fourth is sound financial management for the DoD. I think in the area of sound financial management, Chairperson, we are making significant progress, particularly with respect to the area of the qualified audit, but we still yet have to do more, and we promise we would really be certain that our input in this area will increase in stature. What we also need to ensure is appropriate strategic reserves are provided, and to renew the DoD main equipment and doctrine, and ensure consensus on defense. The issues related to that actually relate to a very important exercise of the defense strategy, which are currently being undertaken in the department and will become more visible in the new financial year. But we've also identified the area of defense research and development as a new important requirement to build and develop our research capabilities in order to impact on several areas, including policy and issues of technology development, and also to be able to integrate the work of the industry. Importantly, underlying all of this, to meet our requirements, is the need to promote an appropriate defense industry, and as I indicated earlier, the issues relating to the appropriate development, transformation, and growth of the defense industry. In the next financial year and leading into the MTF period, we've identified very important policy proposals which are to support these priorities. And the policy proposals include, firstly, the development of a policy framework to form the basis for the Defense Amendment Act and its implementation. And that work will really be concluding the Defense Amendment Act, the regulations that I indicated earlier would be developed, and really to provide a policy framework for all of that to be nestled quite clearly in an appropriate policy environment. The second would be developing as our contribution to the National Security Strategy. Now, the National Security Strategy is under the leadership of the Department of State Security. It does not primarily reside in defense, but we think it has a great impact on our own ability to develop the defense strategy and for us to do work around force design and force structure. So importantly, we'd be wanting to see the development of our own perspective of what can be a contribution through the National Security Strategy, and we believe that work will be happening and will be contributing significantly to it. We'll also be highlighting our important contribution to the crime prevention strategy of government, which is led by the Justice Crime Prevention and Security Cluster. And importantly, as a member of that cluster, we see ourselves playing an important role. But importantly, Chairperson, we've indicated that the cluster has prioritized the rooting out of corruption in security departments as a priority, effectively establishing a zero tolerance to corruption in the security cluster of departments first, as they are expected to be the law enforcement agencies in the rest of the initiatives of dealing with corruption in government. And we'll deal with this issue who are active participants in this cluster, and we'll be able to deal with that in our own environment firstly, and then in the others. Finalization of the DoD border management strategy, which also includes the border safeguarding. I've already indicated that, but we'll be doing the strategy and the policy work that relates and supports our engagements in border safeguarding. We have completed the National Youth Service conceptual framework. In the month of February to March, we have held a pilot project of the National Youth Service Program, which has included 500 youth from the Department of Rural Development who contribute towards their Rural Development Extension Program, and that pilot has been completed. We will then, as a result of that pilot, together with our conceptual framework, be developing the final policy for the National Youth Service, which is going to help us to roll out the program and start its implementation in financial year 11-12. We've already highlighted the important issue of establishment of research capacity in the policy division, which we believe would assist in this particular year. We were expected to finalize the defense strategy and deal with the issues of strategic policy planning at a high level, which will enable us, in fact, to allow the Defense Department to take its rightful place as the leader in defense research, as the primary articulator of defense policy in the country, and to enable us to provide leadership in this area. Would also be reviewing the issues related to the defense industry, as I related earlier, would go back and look at the white paper on defense-related industry and develop a defense industry strategy. We're also looking at the work of the public entities that are under the responsibility of the Minister of Defense and Military Veterans, and there we would be dealing with a strategy to deal with the defense-related public entities, and here we refer specifically to the issues of AMSCO and the specific issue of DENAL. The issue of our relationship with public works will be informed also by our change in perspective to how our relationship with public works is managed, and this will be done through the Assets and Facilities Management Policy Framework. Currently being developed is almost complete, and this will enable us, in fact, to exit from the public works arrangement and establish our own capacity to deal with our assets and facilities in the long term. Development of HR policy, HR development policy and skills development plan, which are normal requirements, but we sincerely believe we need to focus particular attention in human resource and skills development in the department in order to be able to improve our performance in various areas but meet the priority requirements that we've set for ourselves. Development of the defense fiscal and defense capability framework. That's a very important requirement, but will also be derived from some of the work that we're doing around the review of the defense strategy, which in fact will enable us to finalize the fiscal and capability framework. I will speak later to the issue of the budget, and that starts to point you in the direction of what work we're doing around the requirement for a different fiscal framework for defense. We're also going to look at the issue of development on armed forces, the policy framework, which really is a mechanism to enable our armed forces to engage with the South African citizenry in a way that is more responsible, but also that allows for our armed forces to go into communities, engage with communities, and provide support in a way that has not been seen in the last 16 years. We would argue, Chairperson, this is a common practice, particularly in the Commonwealth countries. We are replicating that example. That's something that is done in the United States, in the UK, and all the Commonwealth countries. Apparently, Zimbabwe and Nigeria have the best armed forces day on the continent, and we'd like to emulate what other armed forces do. Long-term infrastructure and other capital plans would also be an integral part of our priorities in policy in order to enable us to deal specifically with the issues around our facilities and to deal with the issues of capital acquisition. The logistics plan would also be developed in this period and a service delivery improvement plan, and then to deal specifically with a reporting framework for the entities that report to the executive authority. I think we've reviewed the issues of how the minister particularly performs oversight role over the entities, and particularly AMCO, and we found that those particular reporting requirements are not as adequate as they should be, and that there's a requirement for them to be reviewed. And then we deal with the issue of public-private partnerships. Consultants in the department would be utilized in the areas that we listed here below, in the supply chain strategic plan of action, in the transformation management advisory board, in asset management, stock verification program, and then in media monitoring, which is an area really that we think is important to enhance our corporate communication function. The most important, which has been brought to attention of the members of this committee, we will be using consultants as the asset management verification program, which is what constitutes the one remaining audit qualification that the department is seized with. We start the financial year with concluding the current arrangement with the consortium that we have, but their contract actually terminates in May. Then we continue the work with the balance of the work that relates to intangible assets, which basically relate to the area of intellectual property. With respect to the public entities that report to the minister, we've listed there, AMSCO, which is a Schedule 2 entity in PFMA, the Cattle Control Board, and importantly, the new emerging entity, which is going to be the Defence Force Service Commission, which will require extensive reporting directly to the minister. In the Service Delivery Improvement Plan, we highlight the areas that we've prioritized and aligning ourselves with Outcome 12, identify service delivery, quality and access, human resource management and development, business process systems and decision rights and accountability management, and importantly, the government priority of tackling corruption in the public service, of which we will even prioritize further because we are a member of the security cluster and we'll be dealing with it in that context. Service Delivery Improvement Plan, the commitments we make is in 12 to 18 months, would hope to be able to be gravitating towards a clean audit in that period with the one asset qualification that remains. But importantly, we believe that during that 12 to 18 months in our interaction with the Auditor General, we'll be able to indicate a new reporting format that helps us to deal with specific issues and we're quite certain that we will come to some agreement with the Auditor General about the adequacy of the plan we've put in place and the effectiveness, so that in fact we can aim for a, we say there very cautiously, a desired standard of no audit qualification in the financial year 12-13. Filling of posts in DOD, reducing the turnaround time for filling of vacancies, enabling all of the vacancies to be filled. And this is also a target that has been set by the President in the State of Nation Address, not only for defense, but all government departments to have filled all vacant posts in 6 months. We'll also importantly finalize the signing of performance agreements of all SMS, which is basically stipulated in the time period in the performance agreement, and we'll ensure that we meet that target fully, including the area of performance assessments and incentives, which are required to be finalized in this period. The second part of my presentation deals with the budget, and in that we start from giving you an assessment of the budget 2011-2012 as announced by the Minister of Finance and its implications on defense. Chair, you'll see there that we illustrate a budget of 34.4 billion, which has been allocated to defense. And I think from our perspective, it's important that we see that budget allocation, as the picture demonstrates, comparatively to other budget priorities in government. Just in terms of allocations and expenditure by departments, basically that outlines the process which has, in effect, in terms of the Appropriation Act, allowed for allocations to be made in government departments, and I won't go to the detail, but it outlines the role of the accounting officer and what their responsibilities are with respect to the budget vote in terms of PFMA and their requirement for compliance. I'd like to pay particular attention to this slide, Chairperson, because this is the slide that tells the full picture. This is the slide that indicates the summary of the defense policy proposal for additional funding, and it also quite clearly highlights what is emerging as a challenge in the defense sector of budget allocation or inadequate budget. Initially, I'd like to focus the minds of members of the committee on the bottom row, which talks to the total. We can come back and deal with each one of those areas, but initially, just to paint the picture, is important consideration of what is contained in the total. We highlight in that table the difference between what we submitted and therefore requested and what we actually received in the budget allocation and the difference. We think it's an important slide. We think it illustrates the challenge that we face in terms of the defense budget. And we would hope both in the budget debate and in the money bill that we are able to convince members of this committee about the importance of this issue. What we submitted for was a total additional to baseline of 5 billion. And that's illustrated in the first row. 5.105 billion. What we received was 501.19 million. The difference between that is 4.586 billion. And that is in the financial year 11-12. In the next financial year, 2012-2013, we submitted for 5.822 billion. We received 808 million. And the differential is 5.104 billion. Financial year 2013-2014, 6.009 billion. We received 1.043 billion. The differential is minus 9.66. Chairperson, we believe that budget allocation on this slide also shows a particular prioritization by National Treasury, which, for instance, if I may highlight, if you look at the area of border control, we almost got 100% of what we required. 100 million the first year, we asked for 236, we got 200 in the second year, we asked for 357, we got 300 in the third year. That to us is a clear indication of what National Treasury is prioritizing and areas where budget allocation will be found favorably, comparatively speaking, to other areas. We also, for your benefit, Chairperson, do further analysis of the budget allocation and were able to provide you with what the previous baseline was and the additional allocations as they are classified in terms of military remuneration dispensation, improvements of service condition, municipal fees, operating expenditure for military veterans, border control, as is indicated there. May I also indicate, lest this causes confusion, that for the previous financial year and the financial year 11-12, the operational expenditure of the military veterans is still on the defense budget. They are not yet a separate vote. We understand that is going to happen in the year that is to come, and that allocation there of 15-21-20 basically is the initial budget of the military veterans, and that's outside of capital and other budgets that they have, just specifically running the department and the establishment of the department. That's another matter that I think is being raised about the inappropriateness of that approach, but that's the Treasury rule for 2011-2012. I'm sure that the situation will change later, but that's also a matter that requires urgent attention in the separation of the budget vote of military veterans from the budget of defense. We then also on that table, Chair, just show you how that growth has happened over the financial years, and we are able to indicate the allocations as they refer to. By economic classification, we also indicate there the economic classification and the various allocations with respect to it. Important is the issue of administration, which is one of the items we take and give you detail around how money is spent on the administrative budget. and we give you a very clear sense of how that grows over the period. We see increases in various areas in the administration, including defense, foreign relations, inspection services, amongst others. In administration, we then organize the information for your benefit according to economic classification, so you can actually see what is that money going to be used for with respect to those areas. So we'll also give you a sense of this general issue we're going to deal with, which is the issue of the defense fiscal framework. And we argue it's important for us to do proper analysis to be able to assess where we are with defense. I think we're sitting at 1.4% of GDP. But we'd like you, for the benefit of the committee, to really just do a brief analysis about what happens to defense budgets and expenditure elsewhere. This map shows you generally what is defense expenditure as a percentage of GDP in other countries on the continent. And you can see South Africa lies in the category of amongst one of the lowest as a percentage of GDP, if you compare it with several of the countries that are indicated there. We also do a broader comparison with other countries, and we see that even though we are lying in the area, as I indicated earlier, we're comparative to countries such as Sweden, Tunisia, I think countries like Brazil and Portugal are performing better than us. Australia is definitely above the magical 2% of defense budget that is set as an international benchmark. Algeria is at 3.03%, Chile is at 3.28%, and India is at 2.58%. In the sub-Saharan African regional defense expenditure, we also see there, importantly, what has happened to defense budgets in the region over that period of time, and you can see a gradual decline overall in sub-Saharan Africa. We believe we are also a major contributor to this decline, as having one of the biggest defense budgets in the region anyway, and we believe we are the ones that are contributing towards that drag. In effect, we tell the story of what has happened to the budget over the period of time, and those amounts that are indicated there just effectively show you how we've declined on percentage of GDP from 1.60% in 2003 to 2% in 2011. We've also done analysis to compare the DoD budget increase versus inflation, and we indicate there the various trends that have impacted on that. We'll give you more information on this one. But it's important for us to just view what the trends that are indicated here and what has happened to the defense budget, particularly in relation to inflation. The points at which the budget and inflation cross over are points of concern and points of where interventions are required. Chair, that also gives you a sense of the budget and what has happened to it over the years, and that's the split between personnel, operating, and armament acquisition over those years. And I think we're all concerned overall that whilst the purse is not growing significantly overall, we have in here a number of issues that contribute to variations of the budget split between the various areas of personnel, operating, armaments, acquisition. So, concluding remarks, we can confirm that we, in our plans, are aligned to the defense constitutional mandate, that the planning documents have been utilized by National Treasury and are done in terms of the National Treasury guidelines. There are new National Treasury guidelines for the preparation of strategic plans this year, and they require much enhanced features, which basically require us to do more work. We've also confirmed that the performance information has been considered, and that emanates from the applicable delivery agreement. And we also confirm that the trendable information indicators for the Defense Force have found expression, the Defense Force and Defense Secretary Planning Instrument. We would like to thank you for your attention and would be able to take questions, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Secretary for Defense. I'm not sure as to whether there are any additions on your part from yourself, but now, the Honorable Member has a very good but plan, which I was asking myself the same question, where will the money come from? I hope the Honorable Members, when they interact, will also assist in making sure that this plan is funded as it is required. Can we get an indication from Honorable Members as to... Dr. Blageni?
Question for clarity from the Chairperson. The DG has to mention this, but I missed it. What did we say was the total allocation for the department? How many billions or two?
38.4.
38.4. And for the military veterans? Sorry, Chairperson, through you, 38.4, the defense sector, which includes NIA and SAS, and then 34 belongs to defense specifically. But all of them are called the defense budget in total. Yes. 38.4. But the one that comes directly to us is 34. The other four goes to NIA and state security.
With the veterans, how much did we say was set aside?
The military veterans budget is currently allocated is indicated as 15, 21, and 20 over the MTF. And that's the operational expenditure of the Department of Military Veterans. I am aware that there are other issues being discussed currently about financing the requirements of military veterans from other sources. And I think it's important for us to know that difference. This is what is being used for running the Department of Military Veterans, but the Military Veterans Department is currently engaging several other areas like housing, social development, and other benefit areas which could be included in the military veterans budget, except that it lies in the budgets of other departments. So I don't want us to lose sight of that, because this is only just the operational side. My understanding is that there's a process currently in cabinet where that comprehensive exercise of the total of the cost of military veterans is under consideration, and I'm sure it will come to parliament at the time that it is required. So the 15 is just the Department of Military Veterans and running it and establishing it and growing it.
Thank you very much. You find that I'm lying, Honorable Dana and Honorable Menia, you'll follow.
Thank you, Chair. And thank the Department for indeed a very extensive program. Chair, let me start here. We indeed are a role player in the international arena, and there's a tendency or an expectation for the Republic to maintain this role. As though we are a third world, and yet we are a third world. We need to remember that. We are signatories in all types of treaties, and we are recognized by the world. I think we also need to give the defense the resources and the budget, therefore, that is befitting for us to maintain this role, the role that the defense is playing. That was a comment, Chair. But now I'll come to my questions. Chair, I would like to understand, what is this military defense, military command structure that we're talking about? What kind of an animal are we talking about? That's one. I've got a number of questions. Sure. On the borderline, I know for a fact that this committee, some time back, has taken a tour of the border posts and the borderline. And we established that there are areas where there's no fence. Whose responsibility is this? And where, even though I've seen on the budget that there is money in terms of the slide that we were showing on the summary of defense policy proposal for additional funding, I see that. But is that going to do the fence and other operational issues that need to be done there in that area? Chair, I've got concerns. DEFSEC has stated here that the department needs to enhance the capabilities of a land one force. Because, for an example, the very borderline that we're talking about, it is on the shoulder of the land one forces. And yet, in terms of that slide again, I don't see any budget that was effected there. How do we hope to do this if Treasury has not given anything on that slide again? In as much as I realize that it takes years to capacitate a pilot or a diver, but how about the land one forces? Because they also need to be more capacitated, because for us as citizens of this country to feel safe and be safeguarded, we need our borderline to be secured, because they are very porous at the moment. The other one, Chair. In the advent of piracy, and may I also remind ourselves that from the east up to Somalia, and in the west up to Nigeria, we are the only navy there is. I am still, because I didn't hear anything of it, how is it that the navy is still in Simonstown, in the corner of Africa, where there is no action, and that you have Durban Harbor, and you have MPA that is administering, where there are all kinds of merchants that are coming into the country. We don't know what's coming in through there. I am not saying MPA is not doing its work, but I think that is the mandate of the naval forces, to make sure that those harbors are taken care of. On the capabilities, enhancement of work capabilities, Chair, the DEFSEC mentioned that they are doing this in order to be able to deal with job creation. I just wanted to find out that is the department talking to other government departments in terms of development and training, for instance, on your artisans, because there are departments who are training artisans, and I also think Department of Defense is the one that can at least assist in that area. The other one, Chair. What is the difference? Because I thought MSDS is the Department of Defense way of developing the youth. Now, the DEFSEC has said they've got the MSDS and the NYS. I need the department to elaborate on that program. What's the difference? Because I understand it differently, maybe. Or they will elaborate on that as to what does it entail. The revitalization and development of defense capabilities. We know that defense capabilities lie on the parathetas. We are talking of your armed corps, we are talking of your finesse. But then we have a challenge. In as much as I'm saying we have a challenge, I am not suggesting at all that we don't need foreign or foreign ownership in this parastatal. But with that, how are we going to exercise control on that? Because remember, we're talking defense capabilities, which means any ammunition or acquisition that we make. In my own mind, when I'm sitting here, I'm thinking, what if the larger ownership of this parastatal is in the foreign hands, what happens then? And on the issue of civil control on defense, yes, I think we need a very straight line as to who does what. Because the secretariat cannot be a referee and a prayer. I'll tell you why, Chair. It is because in terms of rules, regulation, and application in the defense, there are challenges. That's why we have seen unionism in the defense, because of this challenge. Now, on the pie chart, we have seen that the defense has got but a small piece of the pie. Now, when the defense goes on peace mission and does all the work that it does, it uses its budget. Does Treasury immediately brings or pays the money back to the department? Because in terms of what I've seen, that does not look like an enough amount of money that can have the department being able to fulfill its mandate. On the next one, Chair. Who constitutes a standby force? Is this force representative of the country? I think you know what I'm talking about when I'm saying being representative. Because the department is here with all the big houses, I would like to know, in your own view, as head, do you think that there is adherence or compliance to regulation? Because I'm sensing that this is one of the problems that is making members of defense to believe more in union than to yourself. And if you think that there's a lack of adherence or compliance to this regulation, how do you hope to deal with that? Yes, I'm aware that you are talking of the ombuds, and you are talking of the National Security Commission. But in the interim, before we get there, How do you hope to deal with this issue?
And I also saw, Chair, that the DEFSEC talked of the Secretariat or the Department contributing to the National Security Strategy. Once unpacking that, couple that with perhaps unpacking, what are the national key points? Maybe I understand them differently, and certainly it will help me in other people to understand what are the national key points. Thank you, Chair.
Very much, Ms. Daniels. Honorable Mimea, you follow Honorable Masango, Honorable Nana.
Chair, I wonder if I could appeal to you to consider perhaps allowing the Secretary of Defense an opportunity to respond to the 20-odd questions which have already been placed, and then to move on to a second round with me beginning with that second round. Otherwise, I think that the answers will disappear.
No, they are noting. I take it they are noting. We are living in an advanced technology now.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. Let me then just kick off with five odd questions. The Secretary of Defense mentioned that the border safeguarding strategy was under review, and that the deployments and deadlines were possibly being reviewed and ramped up. I wonder if you could just provide us with a little bit more detail. Then, turning to slide 21, the National Youth Service, you mentioned that a pilot program is now underway, and that 500 members of the youth who had been recruited by the Department of Rural Development had now gone through a pilot program in the Defence Force. Now, I think that one risk that the National Youth Service poses to the Defence Force is, of course, the whole question of partisanship. What guarantee do we have that the 500 recruits, which I understand were recruited by the Department of Rural Development, were in fact not recruited from ANC Youth League branches? Do we have any solid guarantees? I ask this question because I've had numerous unconfirmed reports that the trainees themselves in Tobruk claim that they were recruited from ANC youth branches. So I understand that this is a pilot program, but I would want to be reassured that the Defence Force itself is satisfied that recruits onto that program in the future are recruited on a non-partisan basis, and that the Defence Force is firewalled from any possible controversy. So those are the first two immediate questions. Then could I move on to the strategic plan? You will recall, or in fact you would not recall, Secretary of Defense, that on the 17th of March last year, the department presented their strategic plan. The strategic plan was, of course, presented before your appointment, but it was a very unhappy day for the department. Essentially, the National Treasury panned the strategic plan of the department. And they said, inter alia, that there was a lack of higher order focus on outcomes, there was a lack of strategic goals and outcomes. I'm sure that you're familiar with the history. What has the department done to rectify the National Treasury's criticism of the strategic planning process in the department? Then, your presentation focuses quite understandably on the Department of Defense. But my question to you is, what are the objectives, the goals, the outcomes, and the performance indicators that we use to measure the performance of the SANDF and the services? How do we as legislators know whether the South African Navy, for example, are in fact performing against plan? The fact that the Navy might spend 9,000 hours on patrol frankly means nothing. What has the Navy in fact achieved during those 9,000 hours on patrol? What are the outcomes and the outputs that the SANDF and the services are required to achieve? Then moving on to the budget, slide 51, which I think you correctly point us to. Essentially, if I understand the slide correctly, the Defence Force in this financial year are underfunded, in your view, by 4.5 billion rand. The National Treasury did not agree to make those allocations. Now, my question is why? Why did the National Treasury not make those allocations? And Chair, just as an aside, clearly the National Treasury decided not to make these allocations. And I think through you that this committee should make it its business to call Treasury to appear before the committee and explain why it is they decided not to make these allocations. I'm quite sure that one factor would be prioritization. The National Treasury have to prioritize across departments, but there might be other reasons. And the department, we need to understand those reasons. The last question in this round, Chair, you pointed us to detailed summaries of expenditure. My question, and this raises a question about the special defense account. What are we spending in this financial year on acquisition, and what are we spending it on? I'd like to know exactly how much and what we're spending it on. I find it immensely frustrating that I can read James Defense Weekly and read about capital acquisition programs throughout the world, but we do not have a detailed explanation of how much we're spending on acquisition and what exactly we're getting for our money. And I think it's important that we know that. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Manir. Honorable Matango.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, President. Chairperson, my first question is actually based on the vacant positions that are funded, 1,401. And if I may recall, last year, Parliament have to approve a lot of money that has been transferred from one program to another program just to make sure that the staff of the defense is getting salary. Now, this funded post, did we ensure that they are funded in reality, or are we going to wait again and look for money somewhere just before the end of the year so that we can make sure that people get their salaries, like last year when we have to transfer so many funds from so different programs to make sure that people get their funds, their salaries. The second question is also on slide number 21. I also have a problem with, it has been asked by my colleague and the other colleagues, but what I don't understand is you prioritize this youth service, national youth service, but you don't get funded, and it's your priority. I just don't understand, why do you prioritize it if it is not funded? Is there not something that we can protest? And maybe we should just also get a clear clarification. What are we going to achieve with this national youth service as a country and as the Department of Defense? If we keep on hammering on it, because I also don't understand, MSDS is there, but we have another something different that is also we want to achieve. This strategic plan actually, every year we talk about time frame. And I'm just worried. I don't see the time frames of all what we want to achieve. There is absolutely nothing. The only thing time frame I've seen is two of them, and one of them is a clean audit that we're saying is in 2012 and 13. But I'm not sure whether the SGU, are you saying 2010 and 11, 2011 and 12, the audit won't be a clean one? Are you already saying to us, let's not expect a clean audit in two years? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Nana.
Well, thanks, and sorry for being late. Can I suggest that next time you should consider giving Honorable Daniel's last. She is too well prepared and actually covered a whole range of questions that one had in mind. But having said that, Chairperson, I will also be referring that department to slide 21. The last bullet point, defense works capability. Can I understand exactly what do they mean about that? I'm asking this question because I know some time back in the Eastern Cape, the defense did a very good job in building one or two bridges. And to this date, they have not been washed away like Julius Malema's bridges. They are still intact. I want to understand what do they mean about that. And my second question, Chairperson, will really be along what Honorable Daniels was talking about. The contribution of the department in the skills, in the National Skills Development Program. I know for a fact, Chair, that too many apartheid soldiers who left the army to date are running their own small businesses throughout the country. Most of them are artisans, technicians, engineers, and yet they are surviving. So I really want to check from the department what would be your contribution towards this national skills development program.
Thank you very much.
No, I'm not done. The third one, Chairperson, in slide 28, the projections between financial year 11-12 and financial year 13-14 doubles. Can I check in terms of the number of persons days used during internal operations? Can I check what is the rationale behind this projection? Do you envisage something that I do not know? What is it that makes you to double your projections in a space of two financial years? And Chairperson, can I agree with Honorable Manier that it's actually appalling for Treasury not to provide at least half of what the department has asked for? I really want to summon him to say probably as the committee under your leadership, we should consider calling Treasury to come and explain to us. But before Treasury comes to explain to us, I think it's important for the department to explain to this committee whether they present a telling business case to Treasury. Whether they were able to put across a convincing case, Chairperson. Because exactly what one of my colleagues has just said, I find it unthinkable that you set yourself priorities, and yet for the three financial years coming, Treasury has refused to find those priorities or some of those priorities. That would be your border control, your national youth service. I just forget the third one. And then, I mean, how do you hope to achieve such priorities? In this case, they would say, your fist has been chopped, and they're telling you to go and fight. And the last point, Chairperson, is the National Youth Service. I'm one of those people, Chair, who really supports conscription service. You can call it National Youth Service, I don't care. But I really do support such an initiative because it has got a lot of downstream benefits, particularly for our young people. Now, I have not seen the framework, I've not seen it. I would really want to see it, and then probably if your schedule permits, Chairperson, one of these days, I would really suggest that the committee should the department should take us through the framework for National Youth Service, exactly what do they seek to achieve again. Thanks, sir.
Thank you very much. Can we have the department responding?
Honorable Chairperson, honorable members, the comment made by Honorable Member Mlangeni will give rise to a particular approach that I will adopt in how we deal with these matters. We don't want fruitless expenditure. The colleagues that are here with me, the leadership of the department, will be able to deal with some of the questions. And I am primarily responsible for the strategic plan, but they constitute the leadership team that works towards the production. So we don't want anybody coming to Cape Town for nothing. They've come here to work hard. They must work very hard in this committee and be able to engage with yourself.
It remains to be seen, sir. It remains to be seen.
But all the same, a good start.
Honorable Chairperson, let me start by dealing with the broad issues around the budget. And with your permission, I will deal with the issue of the budget in its entirety and answer the various questions that were asked. I think each one of the members asked all the relevant questions around the budget at the strategic level of why the allocation is the way that it is. I think Member Daniel correctly points out to the increased role of South Africa in the international arena, and yet the resources do not reflect that. The issues about the reasons for why the budget is the way that it is, as best as we understand, the matters relating to coming clean to whether we presented a sound business case. Chair, I think there are a number of issues that contribute to the current fiscal framework of the South African government at the moment. And clearly these matters have been communicated to all of us and we understand them. So by definition we align ourselves with the government fiscal outlook, which basically is a very conservative outlook, which looks at almost a significant less growth path on the entire budget of South Africa. And this comes as a result of a number of things I've indicated, including the impact of the recession on our economy. And while South Africa basically did not perform as badly as other countries, we also did not grow in this particular period. And therefore, by definition, the press did not grow significantly to actually contribute towards significant changes on areas such as defense. And I think we appreciate the challenge that Treasury faces. Other governments are significantly in deficit. We managed to just keep our heads above water. But we also appreciate that, in fact, this is a belt-tightening year for all of us. The tendency then in the belt-tightening year that Treasury adopts is one of starting to increase over the MTF. On that slide that deals with the budget, we illustrate to you that we start getting about $1 billion additional to baseline in the third year, which is 2012-2013.
And that's important to note because it indicates that their prediction that the economy would have turned around quite significantly at that point, and therefore we'll start seeing a budget increase. Importantly, Chair, I would say we presented the best case we possibly could. But there are limitations. And we presented the best financial case there could be, because if we unpack for you specifically what we thought was important in terms of the additional to baseline, we provide the detail on that slide 51 and quite clearly indicate to you a very thorough exercise we did to indicate the various increases we required in the various areas and how much was necessary to turn the various situations around. Now, National Treasury also has consideration on matters that they, as National Treasury, may not perceive as priorities. And Chair, there's no fast rule about this issue of prioritization. Every government department, the Department of Defense included, has the ability, once having received its budget, to reprioritize its budget and allocate to programs that it perceives to be of a greater priority than others that have been allocated. The area where the budget is ring-fenced, the money can't be shifted, but largely in other areas, we have the discretion of reprioritization on reallocation to items that we perceive are ours. The National Youth Service in question, for instance, the budget proposal we presented on National Youth Service indicated that we needed an initial capitalization in order to prepare the facilities for the National Youth Service. But in effect, the National Youth Service is structured as a program that generates its own revenue. The government department who come to us to provide a service of training youth recruitees that they have in their own government departments pay us for delivering the service. So in a sense, the National Youth Service will not have a great impact on the fiscus of the Department of Defense. In the long term, it will possibly even generate revenue, significant revenue for the Department of Defense. But what we are asking for is the initial capitalization to prepare the facilities to start operating and to get to a point at which the National Youth Service is operating fully. I'll come back to the details about National Youth Service, but that's in relation to National Youth Service and budget. Our understanding of the National Treasury posture is, one, it's influenced by the recession. Two, it's also influenced by what they have raised as particular interventions that defense must put in place in order for National Treasury to feel comfortable that defense is changing certain of the areas that National Treasury regards as priorities. And let me give you a few examples. One, this budget was done on the basis of the strategic plan and the current policy framework. The Department of Defense, announced by the minister in her budget speech of 2010, is currently in the process of preparing a defense strategy, a defense review, depending on which definition you want to use, which basically will then determine the new way of funding. Particularly, the important component of that is going to be the force design and the force structure. That will create, as far as National Treasury is concerned, adequate impetus for National Treasury to look at a different fiscal envelope for defense. Without that defense strategy, they are very reluctant to give us increases because they'd like to see 5-year plan into the future, particularly in relation to force design that indicates what then they should be funding. But they have a number of concerns around other issues. The issue of public works, we have an express instruction from National Treasury to progressively terminate our arrangements with public works. They follow the examples of the police, of the Justice Department and others who have exited the public works arena. Currently, as defense, we constitute by far the largest fixed asset portfolio within public works. The belief of National Treasury is that public works does not have the capacity to adequately manage portfolios that are as big as ours. The best we can do is exit that arrangement. So they put a hand up until first time that they see we're making progress in the direction of exiting in public works. The other issue that's put on the table is the issue of exit mechanisms and particularly contributing to the priority of rejuvenation of the South African National Defence Force. And they've said very clearly, when they see particular progress of the issue of rejuvenation of the South African National Defence Force, they will be convinced that the NSDS program is producing the new intake, that there is an exit mechanism at the top which allows for other people to go to other areas and importantly influence the new force design and therefore influence a new plan and a strategy moving forward. So they are quite clear about what they are concerned about, and they've indicated and communicated to us. So we don't believe that we are not responding to those issues. In fact, we confirm that since our last engagement with them, we are in the process of dealing with all of those priorities they've indicated. It's that reason that effectively motivates us to stand here boldly and say we think it is time that the issue of the increase of the defense budget is put on the table, primarily because we're making progress on the items where there's been indication and requirements for us to attend. I'm going to ask Mr. Labantu to deal with the issue of the SDA very specifically and very briefly. It's actually quite in accordance to what you've indicated. And I'll come back to him for that. And the issue of also the National Treasury requirements on the strategic plan process, may I ask Dr. Kameda to deal with that? The next issue that I'd like to deal with, so firstly, let me just try and deal with the simpler ones. The military command structure is a question from Honorable Member Daniel. The members of the committee will be familiar with the Defense Amendment Act that we have was promulgated and proclaimed by the President on the 9th of December 2010. In that Defense Amendment Act, we needed to clarify the issue of military command. And basically what was required is the alignment of the current functions that are performed in the Defense Department by the Military Command Council and aligning that with what the Defense Act said, who constitutes the military command structure. And there was misalignment because in the old Amendment Act, the members who were appointed by the President of the Military Command were limited, and the Defense Amendment Act expanded that to basically reflect largely what is contained in the Military Command Council. And that basically has more to do with the issues of who has the right to appoint members of the Military Command Council. Who has the right to command the Military Command Council? So in the amendment, what was said is there were these additional areas. For instance, the specific one is the CHR. Previously, CHR was not part of the military, well, in law, in that part of the definition of military command, was not part of that. And this amendment actually affected that the Chief of Human Resources must be part of that, because in effect, the Defense Force as a force is defined largely in its human resource component outside of the other elements of military command. So that's all the amendment was about, and it was just making that comprehensive and ensuring that all of those were covered. The issue also arose because of the appointments that were made, such as that of the Chief of Defense Intelligence, who previously was not defined as a member of the military command and yet was appointed by the President. So it was basically just aligning those areas. And it was in the Act and it was dealt with.
The issue of landward forces, I think importantly, we recognize the importance of landward forces, but I probably need to go back to the budget to explain what happens in funding allocation. We, in this year, 2011-2012, have what would be described as a baseline allocation. And that baseline allocation is in the region of 34 billion. What we do with National Treasury as we enter into the process, for instance, starting in May of last year, when we go through the process of motivating for increased budgets, we take the baseline as given and assume that that 34 billion is in the bag. It's not negotiable. It will never change. We then argue every year for what we call additional to baseline, and not baseline, because baseline is confirmed and sealed. And in this financial year, which process started around May last year and culminated in a letter of allocation that was given to us in the first week of December, as is traditionally done, of 2010, which is what the Minister of Finance then announces in the budget speech, we were allocated an additional amount to baseline of 519 million, 808 million in the following year, 1043 billion in the outer year of MTN. Now, Chair, what that means is that we still got the money that was allocated to us in the 34 billion. They've just not given us an increase. So the landward forces allocation would still be the same amount that was allocated to us in the previous year. And that remains the same. So by definition, they are refusing to increase the allocation to landward forces. It doesn't mean that landward forces have no budget. It means they have not increased. Now, effectively, what that is still a cause of concern, but it's not such a cause of concern because they have the original budget. What we are able to do on our own, on the budget, is reprioritize and allocate to areas through various mechanisms that we can use, including what we call VIRAMEM, which allow us to go back, look at the budget, and say, well, now that we have border safeguarding, we actually think maybe in the area of the Air Force, we may be able to shift funds to landward, etc., etc. But even that we do in discussion with National Treasury. We then deal with it in the air and have those discussions that allow allocation. So that hopefully is something else that we'll still see, which basically we will do during the course of the year. The issue about the South African Navy, we can confirm that we are considering activating the presence of the South African Navy in Durban, and in fact there are discussions already happening with Public Works around the land that is owned by the Navy in that environment. So we would see the current decision, or the old decision, of focusing on Simonstown being currently reviewed. The issue about works capability, we can confirm, firstly, we intend to use our own internal resources to employ people who are in the department and ensure that they are in the department. But what I'd like to do at this point is maybe allocate the question. Can you deal with that, Dr. Stoff? Works capability. I'll come back. And just more detail you would be able to get on the work capability. But in essence, we want to provide better service for our people, but also provide it for other departments. We're talking to SARPs and others who have opted out of public works, and they're starting to say, in fact, we can share that capacity and use it with them as well, so that our work capability is able to spread itself to other areas. That basically then means in those environments, you would see an emergence of jobs that are created, because in justice they would have to employ people that our works capability works with in order to maintain the properties in justice. In fact, you find that the same arrangement. Eventually you would actually see these, and then there's a tendency towards the security departments to
want to cluster their initiatives. You see us clustering a work capability for the security department so that we have our own capacity to manage our own properties in the future. And the defense one is actually this initiative. May I ask, General Sindane to deal with standby force? He will deal with that specifically. And I'll come back to him on that. I just want to say, and then NYS, Chairperson, I think the best way we can deal with NYS is we can come back for a full briefing and a presentation, because we basically are confirming we have a conceptual framework. And any time you develop a new program like NYS, you must do a pilot project and test. So the results of a pilot project are very important to us to be able to fine-tune the final policy. That final policy will definitely bring to the committee for consideration and deliberation. We're certain of that. And to the Honorable Member Menier, we can confirm the Department of Rural Development recruits people for work, not for party political reasons. Those people are the equivalent of learnerships in the Department of Rural Development. They are actually going to be employed there. They've taken them on a very extensive program on agriculture. They've taken them to various areas. Their last training was here in Stellenbosch at an agricultural college where they spent 3 months. So these are people who work for the department. They're equivalent of what many government departments are establishing, which are extension officers, community development workers, and most government departments, particularly in the social sector, are establishing these units, and that's what we want to take advantage of. We want to take advantage of providing an important service of training of these individuals in the issues that we cover in the NYS, including civic education, which is a better public servant. You have a public servant that's rooted in the service of on the Constitution, you have a public servant that understands rules and responsibilities, you have a public servant that gives you a better product, we think, than what we've been able to do so far. So those are the intended outcomes, but we can come back and give you a full presentation. We pride ourselves for knowing how to instill discipline, we think. I think the Constitution only refers to defense when it refers to discipline. It doesn't refer to any other institution of government. So we think we're quite good at disciplining. And that's what we're offering other, the rest of the public service as an intervention. And we can confirm there is no partisanship as far as we know. These are just simple people who are entry-level departmental employees who then go and get deployed by the department. We've got nothing to do with where they work afterwards. They go back to the department, they get employed. Most of them are going to be going to communities to help them do food security gardens and rural development projects. But we would have helped them to produce a particular type of public servant that then gets fed into that. We're talking to other government departments as well, and they are those community health workers in the Department of Health who go around in our communities and they administer ARVs and medicine at household level. The community Department of Health is interested in us training those people so that they are disciplined, sharp, educated individuals that take their job seriously. You can imagine what it means in a rural village where a civil servant then decides one day they are not going to wake up and go to work, and yet their job is about administering ARVs to a family. And it's that kind of level of seriousness that we'd like to instill in the minds of the people that are recruited by the department. Housing has another set of community development workers who go immediately after projects are completed, and they go and check that people are settled well, there are no cracks in the houses, houses are being developed well, that people are not renting houses out to others, etc. A whole new employment category of people in the housing department. So whilst they undergo training in housing, will come through us for a period and get trained in, we believe, very responsible public servants, disciplined public servants who can deliver a good public service to people. Thank you, Honorable.
Let's have a follow-up at this stage.
On this issue. Okay.
Yeah.
I think you slightly missed my question. Let me first be clear. I'm not suggesting, and I do not believe that the Department of Defense are training members of the ANC Youth League. That I want to be clear. My point is, and this is a pilot program, what guarantees do we have as the Department of Defense that the originating department, in this case the Department of Rural Development, did not recruit people from ANC Youth League branches? Now, I don't think that you're in a position to give me that guarantee, but I think going forward, the Department of Defense are going to have to do due diligence to ensure that the originating departments are recruiting members on a professional and non-partisanship basis. Otherwise, we, as the Department of Defense, are going to put at risk.
Chairperson, Honorable Maynard is asking a wrong question in the wrong department.
No. Okay. Fine. Let us not disrupt the meeting. Honorable Maynard, let us not disrupt the meeting. We are not talking to the ANC or any other party now. We're talking to the department, isn't it? Now, the department must do what they are supposed to answer, and they cannot talk for other structures that do not exist in here. Go on, Honorable Secretary.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. I can confirm that we rely on the government prescript for recruitment of staff, which govern every government department, and we have no reason to believe any government department would deviate from what are prescripts prescribed in the Public Service Act around recruitment. And that's what we rely on. But thank you very much, Member. I can proceed on that one. We'll come back, Honorable Members, with a full brief on the NYS when it is ready and be able to present to you a much more coherent policy framework. We are at conceptual framework at this stage. The pilot will help us to convert the conceptual framework into a policy framework. And that's what we'll be bringing back to you. Chairperson, let me stop there. I'll come back to the others later, but let me give the other colleagues an opportunity to respond to the other questions, and we'll make our way to the questions.
Thank you, Chair. About the strategic plan or the improvement in the strategic plan, yes, there were weaknesses last year. What we have done to date is that first we worked with the National Treasury, the Technical Assistant Unit of the National Treasury, to do what we call a diagnostic evaluation of our plans. After that, they assisted in the refinement of performance information. So our targets and indicators are more refined and more specific now. They also assisted us to develop a strategic planning framework that guides the department, the strategic planning process of the department. As you have seen when the SECDEF was presenting, we have very clear outcomes now, only two outcomes. We also have very clear outputs. We have also, after we've done the draft, we consulted the National Treasury, and they have given us a positive opinion on this strategic plan. We have also consulted the Presidency to make sure that they also look at at our plans and whether or not we have incorporated the MTSF information as well as the priorities of government, which we have done. And finally, Chair, on the time frame issue, if you look at our APP from page 50 to page 57, there we have the very clear quarterly deliverables. So we are actually much more specific than we were last year. And then I must indicate that we do continue to refine this information. The next year's plan will even be better than this one, but this one, there is a marked improvement on our plans this year. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question was asked by Honorable Menier on the
the amount spent through the special defense account on acquisitions. I can confirm from the published figures that the total amount across the program, the six programs, including our administration, on special defense is 5.973 in the coming year, 6.6 billion in the following year, and 6.59 billion. The component of acquisition out of that will be provided by the SASEF. I'm not certain whether he is able to provide the full details of each of the projects today.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, when you look at acquisition, you must understand there's two components here. So one is the strategic defense packages, which is always coming to an end. And then there's the other work that we are talking about, where we're looking at the main acquisition of main projects. There's also another step in this environment, which we call technology development. That means specific technology that's being developed with research institutes that's going to support our projects in the future. The other thing that's very important when you start looking at the whole acquisition is to understand that over this life cycle, you start the technology development, then you start with a concept phase, then you go to the definition phase, and then you go into a production phase. Now, within our project, for 2010, there was 6.9 billion, 5.2 billion for 11, 4.8 billion for 12, and 4.6 billion for 13. Of that, the STP for 2010 was 2.6, 2.2, and then it scaled down to 506 and 122. And those specific two point six of 2010 was divided by the South African Air Force for 2.4, and the Navy was only 140, and then the 11, 2.1, and the Navy only 76, where after the Navy doesn't have any more funds. Those funds were mainly spent on strategic defense packages, which is like the Gripen, and that is why you find a lot of money still left there, and like the Hawk aircraft. Then when you go to the other acquisition, you find for 2010, there's 4.3 billion, then 11 was 3 billion, then 12 was 4.3 billion, and 13 was 4.4 billion. And if you look at that figures, you would find that those figures were divided between the concept phase, the development phase, and the production phase, and then you could go into the specifics of the land and the air and the maritime, of which the land you could see has reduced from 2 billion to 958 million for next year, then 1.1 billion, then 1.2 billion, and the air is roughly at 1.2, 2.4, and 2.1, and then the smaller amounts with the other people, with the exception of technology development, which is more or less stable at 400 million through the period. And I think this is an overall of how this acquisition is divided. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. May I ask Dr. Nagara to deal with that other question?
Thank you, Chairperson and honorable members. I was requested to deal with the definition of works capability. I will start by saying the military skills development that we are acquiring on an annual basis, its main purpose is to rejuvenate the force. And as you rejuvenate, there are those that are aging that you will not be able to deploy when deployment is necessary. So we have two voluntary programs. One program is the works capability, where those that are aging, we provide them with skills that will be able to assist, as the sectors have emphasized,
the skills that will be able to will provide them with skills to be able to maintain our facilities. So the main purpose of the work regiment is it's going to be a project team that is going to maintain our facilities as they age. And we have another project, which I said is voluntary. Some of them, those that don't want to get into works regiment, they are being transferred to the police. We have a program, a standing program with the police, where on an annual basis we transfer some members to the police while others join the works regiment. Thanks.
Thank you, Secretary for Defense, Honorary Chairperson and Honorable Members. The question I am answering is the question asked by Honorable Ms. Daniels on the standby force. This, I think, is a point which we can take back to the beginning of 2000, where the African Union decided that there has to be a force in the whole of Africa which will stand and be available in case of any emergency. And of course, the approach at that point was then that the regions, five regions were established, and SADC was one of those regions. The regions will then start their own forces as regions, and SADC started a SADC brigade. And SADC Brigade has been quite active. It has undertaken a few exercises until now. And of course, the view is that in due course, this standby force will be in a position to carry out certain joint exercises. But of course, that time seemed not to be on the horizon, as we can see what is happening in the north of Africa. Thank you very much, Secretary.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. If we may continue with the question.
That's okay. You want to make a follow-up question?
Thank you, Chair. Not a follow-up. Yes, I hear the interest. I think the operative word for me was, is it representative?
Okay.
The Constitution was from our side, South Africa, is it representative?
I think maybe the question also is not about the African standby force, because the African standby force will be mainly constituting of Africans. I suppose the question is really directed to our region here, and our region here consists of SADC, and the main driver in SADC naturally is South Africa. And most of the exercises that have been carried out have been carried out in our territory, as much as other territories have been used, like Angola and Mozambique, and we would glad to see more and more of those taking place outside South Africa. But in the long run, this is also a situation where this standby force, or rather SADC brigade, should be able to intervene in the place of only having the SNDF intervening in emergencies. So it is thoroughly representative. The SNDF today is majority consisting of Africans, and the SNDF, of course, in the top level, is also led in the meaning by Africans, and there's no doubt about whether people are represented or not. Thank you. Secretary?
Honorable Chairperson, may we continue with the questions that were asked, and we unfortunately have to go back and forth, but we'll try and follow the order. The issue about foreign ownership in parastatals, we indicate clearly that we are going to be engaging the NAL and the Ministry of Public Enterprises about issues relating to the future of the NAL. We know that there are a number of challenges in this environment, and we'll ensure that we're able to overcome all of those challenges to contribute to the operational effectiveness of Danel, we are the primary beneficiary of the existence of Danel as the South African Defence Force, or may I put it differently, Danel's raison d'etre, their reason for existence, is to provide for the South African National Defence Force primarily before they provide to others. So importantly, we have to make sure that Danel meets our requirements, and the issue of foreign ownership will ensure does not stop or prevent Danel from meeting the reason, meeting the requirements of the SANDF as it is primarily in existence for that purpose. And I must indicate there are discussions that are going on to clarify this issue. There's also an issue of foreign ownership that will arise in the context of the proposed and work that will be done, defense industry support strategy, which will include, of necessity, the BEE charter of the defense industry, which we have started deliberations with the industry on, and will result in the interrogation of the issue of foreign ownership of companies and their obligations to meeting the requirements of what the South African policy prescripts, such as the BEE law, requires of other companies in other sectors. Honorable members, this is not a new matter. In every matter, where in every industry where transformation has happened, the issue of foreign ownership has come up as a very important issue. I would just like all of us to recall the negotiations with Hewlett-Packard when the ICTF charter was being negotiated. One of the biggest ICT companies, which is American-owned and foreign-owned, the big deliberations, even spilled over to Parliament some 4 years ago maybe, around that particular issue. So we hope to follow the examples of how other charters have been dealt with in South Africa and deal with the defense industry in exactly the same way. But it's in that context that foreign ownership, I'm certain that there's no issue about foreign ownership in its contribution to foreign direct investment, but there are issues about compliance to South African law that basically become a necessary prerequisite for any industry strategy and any industry transformation strategy. The next issue would deal with adherence, compliance, improved management, and I think that's a question the Honorable Member asked the entire leadership of DOD and asked whether in fact we can confirm that we are compliant and are able to meet our statutory obligations. The Defense Secretariat primarily is established to ensure enhancement in civil control over the defense force. We also look at the issue of redefining what that civil control means in terms of ensuring primarily that the issues of compliance and reporting by the SANDF are done in a better way than has been done previously. We have identified pockets of areas where we perceive issues of compliance may have been lacking. One of them, a matter that has been deliberated upon by this committee, Honorable Chair, which is the issue around grievances. And we acknowledge that we've not been fully compliant in being able to deal with grievances up to far, but we now have in place a new grievance procedure that stipulates clear time frames that actually ensures that we're able to respond to the grievances of members of the SANDF. Supplement that with the bill that's going to come through, which is the Military Ombudsman Bill, which will establish the Ombuds Office where members of the SANDF can go and lodge their complaints if they feel the grievance procedure has not borne results, they are able to deal with those matters and raise complaints and have their matters attended to. Even the regulations that will be derived from that Military Ombuds Office will further stipulate time frames and tight deadlines for turnaround times for responses and all of that. If you couple that with the establishment of the National Defense Force Service Commission, it as well calls upon members of the Defense Force to raise complaints, deal with matters of their salaries, review their service conditions,
on an ongoing basis. So we think that three-legged approach will give us enough institutional mechanisms to be able to cover areas of dissatisfaction, enforce areas of compliance, and ensure that we specifically improve our management system throughout the defense force. We are determined to do this, Chair, because in a sense, on the basis of the commitments we've made, the management systems and processes, and particularly our management, is a matter that gets measured by two audits that are carried out. The first audit is by the Public Service Commission, which basically periodically is improving their audits. They are becoming like the Auditor General now. And they will audit us on all these matters. And importantly, we would also rely on the Auditor General to be able to pick up on matters. And we don't wait for the Auditor General, but matters that have already been identified mean that we must correct within the time period that is stipulated. We don't aim to carry through any items once a matter is identified. We aim to resolve it with immediate speed and ensure that those matters are actually dealt with. So there's a lot of work going on in defense currently, reorganizing our systems, establishing new arrangements, establishing management systems and accountability mechanisms, reviewing some of the old decisions that may have referred to delegation of authority and powers, a whole lot of re-engineering, business process re-engineering that's going on currently, which will help us improve the performance of the DoD overall, but also sharpen much more clearly the role of the Secretariat as opposed to the role of the SANDF and the relationship between the two in line with the Constitution and meeting the constitutional requirements. Chairperson, the next question related to national key points, and may I take both national key points and border safeguarding? Those are emerging as priorities that will be dealt with. I can confirm that the Defense Force has a cabinet decision for them to revert back to the national key points. We're currently having discussions with South African Police Service, who were previously responsible for this function. Like borderline, we would be taking over national key points and would be discussing the detail of how we do that with SAPS, and that basically will become a priority for the DoD in the short term. And that would include, it is emerging to us, extensively reviewing the framework for what are defined as national key points. We also believe that the current definition of national key points is very limited. For instance, we believe there are other, and the criteria for allocating national key points, we believe, might require review 17 years down the line, because we believe there are other installations, institutions of government that are of strategic importance that must be treated as national key points because of their strategic importance, which normally, when you apply the criteria, don't fall within that category. And that would be an important consideration. Our contribution to the national security strategy, I can confirm also, that process is led by the Department of State Security. We will be developing our input to it to ensure that we actually at least able to define security from a defense perspective, so that by the time they get to the elements of finalizing the strategy, they have our input and we're able to then deal with it. The importance of that national security strategy is that it forms the basis for us to then finalize our defense strategy and the issues related to force design and force structure. Honorable Member, when you asked the question about border safeguarding, we can confirm, and we do not have the details here with us, but we can provide the member with details around the border safeguarding issues. We've indicated here the amounts that are allocated, and I'd like to deal also with the previous question by the member around fences and the challenges of border safeguarding. A quick response would be, quite simply, we're showing that this is our biggest priority. Our threat assessment across the board in various government departments indicates that
the movement of people, and particularly the movement of illegal immigrants, requires a much more focused strategic response from our government. So you see across government there are a number of initiatives. The Department of Home Affairs has decided to respond to this challenge. They must deal and prioritize the Zimbabwean illegal immigration population. And they've done so in a focused way. They've taken them through a particular process, and they've actually dealt with that challenge. The second would be basically for us to curb the movement of people illegally into the country. And as the DOD, we've ensured deployment in the eastern border, and we'll be extending those to Lesotho and Namibia and Botswana at a later stage. What has changed fundamentally, which has resulted in fast-tracking, is the process which we have embarked upon to bring back the Lesotho deployment. The Lesotho deployment in our original plan was meant to happen in 2012-2013. But there's been considerable pressure. We've been listening to the people in the area. There is a challenge of stock theft in that area that is impacting on very serious security. So the combination of stock theft and illegal immigration that is creating a concern, a security concern for the country. So that's what we've brought back, but also we've committed to expand the extension and full deployment on the Eastern Front, which includes the area of Mozambique, Swaziland, around the KZN, all the way in Mozambique to KZN northern border, which basically will ensure the completion of that deployment. But in essence, we're starting to have impacts. The SAPS are moving out of bases. We are moving into bases and taking over. People are settling down. They are, we can fact and figures, they can tell you how many counterfeit cigarettes they've caught, how many illegal goods they've already caught, how many stolen cars they've prevented from crossing the border, etc., etc. So good impact is being observed in this area, and we're impacting largely upon really crime and criminal activity, including illegal immigration. Our relationship with SAP is very clear. It ensures that whilst we do borderline, we still depend on them. I think the range is some 10 kilometers from the border where they have police stations, because once you catch a criminal, you're the SADF, you must refer them to a police station. And that relationship exists. We're all happy. The police are happier because they think they'll see a saving on their budget when they conclude their exit from this particular area. And I think they say there's a very strict CFO who's making sure that they move very quickly because of the budget savings they may see. The next question relates to the issues around the SADF and objectives. We have in this document, we have the overarching document, which actually provides for high-level information that relates to that. And in fact, I think the question would ask us the question, how would we know if services have performed? And to say to Member Menyer, we normally do that through the annual report. And the annual report is tabled in this house. We deal with the detail of whether, in fact, we have performed in accordance to that. But I think the real issue is the major contributor to this is the new format that has been prescribed by National Treasury. We ourselves, and one of the problems we have is that this is our first year for this format, and we're all trying to get to grips with it. Honourable Chair, you are probably one of the few committees that are sitting here today with a strategic plan that has been completed. And when you hear that other departments have not completed strategic plans, it's not just out of underperformance. This new format has created a lot of problems in government. Firstly, what it does is it cuts the time frame by 6 months or 3 months, in effect. Normally, we would have been presenting the strategic plan to yourselves now, before the budget. But if you recall, in effect, we could even provide the budget presentation to you without the strategic plan and do the strategic plan later. But importantly, we are required to submit this in January, according to the new format. This was ready. In fact, most departments were supposed to submit in November last year.
So this year of trial of the new format is something that we're all experimenting with. We are looking specifically at the contents of the report. There are probably five more levels of required of reporting that have been stipulated by this, and there are different ways that are appropriate for the management of that information which is required, which may be giving indications around performance. But we're actually in a trial year, and that trial year means, in certain instances, the detail of the information would be made available in different ways to committees for consideration. One of the important things for us is to make sure at least that we comply with the overall format. We've been in discussions with National Treasury since August last year to discuss in detail whether indeed we comply with their requirements, and we've been managing a very tight process to ensure our compliance levels. We deal with that, but importantly, we'll also find that our presentation to the committee, because of the new format, needs to take various stages in order to discuss the various levels of information that is required. What we do here is to provide you high-level information for the purposes of facilitating the budget debate and ensuring that at a strategic level the objectives are understood, the outputs are understood, and basically the information that is contained is relevant. There may be, and there is in this particular case, other detailed information, because that new format requires it, that may need Chairperson to serve before the Joint Standing Committee because of its detail. And that's basically what this new format has resulted in, and that information will be made available in the reporting cycle as we proceed. So we're quite certain that this year is a very funny year, if you like. It's a year where, in fact, Parliament will benefit from much greater detail, but the way that information is made available will differ from previous years. But in the end, we go right down to the minutest detail and of every area, but that minute detail will be provided at the end. The next question relates to the issue about Parliament. I know Honourable Member Masang is not here. He indicated that Parliament has improved increases to salaries, and yet at the same time we are talking about personnel issues and salaries. I just think there was a misunderstanding which I need to clarify. The increases in salaries which were referred to before are increases to salaries at level 1 to 12. And that means, ideally, deputy directors downwards. And those were an adjustment to the base salary which had not been attended to, which the minister was of the firm view needed to be considered in order to bring up to speed the salaries in the Defence Force, particularly to start making it in line with the police service. And that is a recommendation of the Interim Defence Force Service Commission, which clearly indicated this was a crisis point, and this is a point that needed specific attention. Now, the member relates this question to funded vacant posts. And I would just like to confirm, maybe to simplify the issue. Every funded post in the department has budget allocation associated with it. We will be able to fill those posts. We will not be coming back to Parliament to look for more money for that. And in fact, the instruction that comes from the President on filling of all vacant posts is specific that it must be funded posts that are filled, because you can't fill an unfunded post. But effectively, Chair, I think we are persuading both Treasury and the Department of Public Service and Administration to really get rid of this definition of unfunded vacant posts. Because what actually happens in practice is you have an organizational establishment which is a wish. The department wishes to have so many people. What you have in practice is a treasury that allocates money, and then you have a funded structure. The difference between what you wished for and what you have, in effect, becomes irrelevant. So defining that as vacant, in a sense, is almost just saying it was my wish to have so many people. Treasury, the only instrument that can tell you how many people you have, gives you money for the smaller number. So was all of government learning and gravitating towards never using the bigger number anyway, because it's a wish and it doesn't mean much. It may indicate
structurally and in terms of organizational development, that ideally that should be the structure of the department. But if the fiscus says no, you can't have that, then we should stick to what the fiscus indicates to us we should have. We will not be asking for salary increases. The money, this budget for these posts is actually available and we're able to spend it. There are other questions around building bridges, support to other government departments. I think the Honourable Member also asked a question with respect to that. We believe, Chair, that there's a separation between National Youth Service and those kind of programs, building bridges and support to other government departments. I think the Member was defining the building of bridges as if it were an internal program, and yet, in fact, it's one of our programs around supporting the people, which is pillar 3 of our strategy, which indicates how, in certain instances, we're able to go and assist government departments. In fact, one may define the National Youth Service as falling under that pillar, because it is indeed a training support intervention to other government departments, and it enables the SNDF to utilize its capabilities to support other government departments in the area of training specifically. Then there was a question on the projection on person days, which has doubled in operations. Are you able to deal with that? I'll ask Admiral Green to deal with that. And Chair, I would believe that we've really attempted. Oh, then the final question was a question of when we aim to eradicate the qualifications. Chair, we were very clear. We appeared before the Standing Committee on Public Accounts, and we're clear that it's probably going to take us 12 to 18 months to rid the Department of Defense of the one qualification that exists, which is a qualification on athletics. In that area, we can give progress to this committee and confirm. We've completed the asset register of 6 properties. That means by the 1st of April, we'll be tabling for approval the entire asset register for 6 properties. That's one of the elements which was not previously provided for. We have got a number of interventions that relate to movable assets, tangible movable assets, where we are finalizing our work with the consultants in place until May. We're also in that area on the big items, and big items are transportation equipment and big logistical equipment, aircraft, ships, and all of that will be complete with our audit by the 1st of April as well. And then we will have to deal with 2 areas in the balance of the period. One, that's the small items, which includes ammunition. And 2 is the issue of intellectual property. That's all there is for us to be able to complete in this area. And we're quite confident within 12 to 18 months we'll have completed. It doesn't mean, Chair, that we're not doing the best we can. We really are trying to do our best. But when you come down to counting ammunition and verifying it, it's a little bit of an exercise. We're now in the period where we're getting into the small nitty-gritty items, which would mean it just takes time. Even if we wish to do it earlier, we practically are not able to do it earlier. And that would deal with the general issue of the audit. But it's not only those issues, there are other issues, irregular expenditure, unauthorized expenditure, and again, we'll be coming back to the Standing Committee on Public Accounts to give our full report on those items, which we started and we've established systems for their management, effective management, and elimination or eradication in the defense environment. Finally, Chair, let me ask Admiral Green to deal with the issue of person days, and that will bring us to a conclusion on the questions that have been posed before us. Thank you.
Thank you, Secretary, Honourable Chairperson, and Honourable Members. This issue of the mandate is linked to the return to our border because it relates to internal deployment. Now, the question would probably come from the huge number of mandos that we did in the year 2010 and 2011. Well, that was because of what we termed Operation Quello. That was the support to the FIFA Soccer World Cup 2010. But if we look ahead, this is directly linked to those funds that were allocated. We can see it there. 100 million, 200 million, 300 million as we eventually grow. And we must then also mention that the fast tracking of our return to border will mean that we will reappreciate this, and we'll probably see a bigger jump in the number of man days on internal deployments. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think we have come to the end of our meeting. You may not be aware. I'll give you 2 minutes. I'll give you Mania 2 minutes. I'll give you 2 minutes in this.
Thank you, Joseph. A very simple question to most of you, but difficult one for me. When you speak of diplomatic defense diplomatic mission, is it the same as whatever people refer to as military attaché?
Honorable Daniel?
Thank you, Chair. Two things, Chair. On the reverse, revitalization of the reserve, I have a concern there. You see, there's been a trend of people who have exited, or people who have gone to pension, not being absorbed back in the reserve. Is the department dealing with that? That's one, Chair. The last one, Chair. The best part is just that something very nice. Irregular expenditure. Wasteful expenditure. At what point does it become corruption? Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Mayor, briefly.
Thank you, Chair. I know that we're running out of time. I think there is one additional matter which we do need some clarity on. Not least because the Secretary of Defense has indicated that additional funding from the National Treasury is probably contingent on this. And I'm referring to the, if you like, defense strategy, defense update document, defense review, defense white paper. We need some clarity on, first of all, when is it that the so-called defense strategy is going to see the light of day? That's the first thing. And the second thing is what kind of process is going to follow. I think we need some clarity on that matter. Chair, just in terms of defense acquisition, the answer that I was after was really, in this financial year, what are the projects on the SCAMP that we will be dealing with? What exactly do those projects deal with? And how much are each of those projects going to cost? It might not be possible to provide that detail in this meeting. We're also running out of time, but at some point we need those details. I will not support a budget where we will be spending in excess of 5 billion rand on capital items that for 2.5 years nobody will disclose to me. I will not support the defense budget based on that. I want to know exactly what we're purchasing, what it costs, and what the timelines are. The last point, Chair, just through you, I think I hope that there would be some consensus in this committee, but I do think that we need a separate meeting with the National Treasury to explain why they did not allocate the required funding to the department. Thank you.
And remember that we have never supported any budget.
No,
that will be seen too.
It's in your hands.
No, I think the committee is very much interested in making sure that this department achieves its objectives. I think if you say we are going to call Treasury, I'm sure it will be on that level. Okay, please, we want this department to achieve its objectives. Those will be the last questions. Can you, the department answer that?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. May I confirm to the Honorable Member Mlangeni
the defense diplomatic missions referred to the defense attachés across the world that we have, and that indicates that we're very stable in that environment. We don't want to grow significantly. The issue about revitalization of reserves, the question I've asked by the honorable members to why it is that we don't absorb former members back into the reserves so that they become available. May I ask, Chairperson, that we would ask very specifically, and I know this because the decision has been taken by the Minister, that the members of the committee are benefited by the Chief of the Reserves with a full presentation on the reserve revitalization strategy. It consists of all of these elements, and it indicates exactly what is intended to do to expand and make the reserves a much more effective force multiplier, but importantly, how they can contribute towards meeting other problems of unemployment, etc. So may I ask, I'm taking advantage of my knowledge that the instruction for the Chief of Reserves to come to Parliament was issued in January of this year by the Minister at our work session here in Cape Town. So I'm certain for the just logistics of getting into Parliament and setting a date with the committee, maybe the Secretary would be able to help us to prioritize that issue so that you can deal with the issue of reserve comprehensively, but also look at the issues that come out of the Defense Amendment Act that imply significant changes in with respect to the reserves, and that whole strategy can be presented. Expenditure, wasteful expenditure. I think we aim in totality to eliminate or minimize the occurrence of such transgressions. We agree that when you have such a tendency, as you have in a department like Defense, where the occurrence of these transgressions is not insignificant, collectively, that can be defined as a very concerning situation which requires intervention. Now, I'm happy to say that intervention we've already done. We now know on every single occurrence what irregular expenditure happened, why it happened, who is responsible, what disciplinary action has been taken against that person, if not, why not, and how to recoup those funds. But that is in line with the Treasury requirements. Because, for instance, if you deal with irregular expenditure, that is not a loss to the state as such. It means the money has been well spent, except a particular prescript was not followed in the way that it was spent. Wasteful expenditure normally requires you to recoup it from the individual. Honorable Chair, I must confess, in all my travels, in all my years in many government departments, I've not come across such a rigid deduction from salary mechanism as exists in Defense. I find it shocking, but I think it exists, and the ability for members to have money withdrawn from their salaries from finance is like that. So, as we are dealing with the issues of irregular expenditure and wasteful expenditure, we will rely on that very mechanism. If you are liable for wasteful expenditure, maybe you can negotiate how long it takes you to pay it back. Maybe if it's too much money, but pay it back you will, and we go straight to your salary to get it back. So I think we are, Chairperson, if we can just be given one more financial year, will be in a much better place when it comes to this issue. But we've done the assessment. On each case, we know exactly what's going on. And that's our starting point. And once we know the issues to take action, in cases where no action has been taken, we're doing the follow-up to ensure that those who are not taking action are also held liable for not taking action. So that, in fact, we just clean the environment out of these problems. As I agree with the Honourable Member, collectively, once you look at those things, you find an environment that is very prone to corruption, because once members start using irregular expenditure as a way of diverting funds to other places, then it is indeed, it is corruption. It's nothing less than corruption. But at the moment, we would like to assess the response of each and every one of those cases, and that exercise has already been completed. The issues around defense strategy, I can confirm to the honorable member. We are currently very busy. We've done 70% of the work with respect to this. We'll be completing the exercise. There will be a public part of the exercise, at least there will be stakeholder engagement and finalization and parliamentary consultation and all of that. And the projections are that we'll be looking at, you know, the minister will confirm, but we'll start engaging by July this year. We'll be going to cabinet Kutla and those kind of other forums. But ideally, I would say South Africa by the end of this year will have a product. But the formal engagement will start in about May, with Treasury in fact. The draft will be going into Treasury to influence the budget for the following year. So that's a given. Because if we miss this year, we'll only go in next year, and that will only be budget 13-14, and that's not ideal. So Treasury will probably be the first beneficiary of the finalized draft of the strategy. The issues around Chairperson, I would confirm, as we have at SCOPA and others, the detail relating to this is available to members via the Joint Standing Committee. All the details, right down to the name of each item and when and why and all of that. So I'm sure it is not this committee that considers that, it's a Joint Standing Committee, and full reports are provided on the SDA with respect to that committee. And I understand now that there are even schedules of meetings that are being planned for this kind of thing. One of them, Chairperson, is a workshop that is planned with the Joint Standing Committee, at which we would make full presentations on all the items without fee and favor, on the items that belong to Joint Standing Committee. So that we can confirm, including the details around the scan, the reprioritization, and everything else that goes with it. Chair, the meeting of the National Treasury is not in my place, but we would support it so that members also fully understand what National Treasury is placing as the objectives that must be achieved by ourselves before they turn the situation around in defense budgets allocation. We believe that we definitely are on a trajectory for new things. The motivating point, as I would confirm, is going to be our delivery of that draft strategy to them in May, as we start with the MTEC deliberations, and from that they'll be having a different outlook to defense. But I'd like in the debate about this issue for this to be, because it is a great concern for us and the country, and we think we, between us and Treasury, we know it's a problem that's going to be fixed soon, but it's important for all of us to attend to this debate so that it's not just left between two government departments. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Before I give Honorable Mabeza to give us a vote of thanks, I'd like to remind members that this committee is a very important committee because it deals with matters of national security, defense of our borders, defense of our citizens, of knowledge, keeping peace all over in parts of Africa. The reason that it is on those basis that I give members enough time to offer, to forward their questions, to ask the department and everything. But I want to say to members that it should not be a license to get involved in the disruptive behavior, professional behavior, and street fights. I saw a mini street fight somewhere there in the corner. Honorable Mayor, did you see it? If Mazia was here, I would tell you. So I'll appeal to all of you to refrain from such behavior. When we ask Honorable Mabeja to give us a vote of thanks,
I think you'll be involved in so many street fights, I don't notice them anymore.
Okay, so now we'll keep on warning you. Before that, the Honorable Mabeja, the committee report on this budget and strategic plan will be forwarded to all members and on Monday.
and in preparation for adoption on the latest Thursday, and next week we'll be having the public hearing. And I guess all members have received submissions that were sent from to us. And thank you very much, Honorable Mabela.
Thank you, Chairperson. Firstly, let me take this opportunity and thank the department for the formative presentation, which is well presented to us as a committee. At the same time, it is also giving us as a committee time and so that we can also look to the challenges that the department is faced with. The first challenge that we have seen that is coming up is that the department itself, it needs an additional money so that we can carry out the duties up to their level best. The second thing is that, Chairperson, to the department itself, what we see a leadership that is outstanding, and a collective decision that is being taken. We want to commend the Secretary of Defense for that role that she is playing. It also shows also to us, and it's also a lesson also to us as the committee members, that this is not for us as committee members and department, but this is for the nation, that we have to behave and keep it up. And by all these words, I want to say to the department and all the members of the committee that thank you very much for your time. We wish to see you again. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mabela. And the meeting is adjourned.